In this episode of Dear Analyst, I'm going to be talking about what drives me to do this podcast, to stay involved in the Excel community, as it were, and maybe a little bit about what got me into this space initially. And this is the 10th episode of Dear Analyst. Didn't even think I was going to make it this far. Started off as an experiment and kind of enjoyed doing it just because I can talk about a lot of stuff that's on my mind in regards to data analysis and new technology that I'm seeing every day, every week, and also to be able to recap just other episodes from other podcasts that I enjoy that are somewhat related, but sometimes not so much. And yeah, going back on the main topic of today, this is the 10th episode, and I wanted to kind of start with basically a brief story about what spurred me to get involved with the community, to start writing blog posts and answering questions on Quora, and just a little bit about the backstory of this Excel experiment, if you can call it such. So back in 2000, I want to say 13, I had created this with an old colleague of mine. I created this product called, it's not really called this, but the brand was called KeyCuts, which is where my blog and this podcast is hosted. It was really kind of a simple product to help people learn Excel, specifically on the Mac. And if you go to the homepage of where you're listening to this podcast, if you're listening to it online, you'll see a picture of the product, which is a silicon rubber keyboard cover that goes on top of the older generation MacBooks. And it shows the 15 most used keyboard shortcuts on the keys. And after I created the product, we sold a bunch initially, but then as with many new products, sales started kind of dying down, and it didn't really make me that concerned because I had started this product as a side project, but I was thinking about how does a small company or a small product, a small brand get their name out there when they're just starting off? And I think that's a challenge for many small businesses. And I thought about, well, I should probably start talking to some bloggers and some influencers in the Excel space so that I can get my name out there, because, you know, if there's someone else that's talking about Excel, chances are they might find the product that I made interesting. And so I started kind of browsing around blogs and send a few emails out to people. And that's when I started getting kind of hooked into this broader Excel community. Everything from the Mr. Excel forums, which I mentioned in the last episode for the count blank trick. Everything from Bill Jelen's Mr. Excel forum to answering questions on Quora. I realized that, and also just to Microsoft Office's Excel community online, I started realizing there's this really tight-knit group of people that are really passionate about the Excel platform and love answering questions. And I thought this would be a good way for me to build my own kind of brand in the Excel space. And that was kind of the initial spark that caused me to get more involved and to talk to more people, to write more blog posts, to build more content, all that, you know, content marketing 101 stuff, I guess you could say. And along the way, I learned a lot of nice tips and tricks around SEO, around how to write good blog posts, and what's the best way to like cross promote another brand. So I learned a lot of these like kind of just interesting marketing concepts for building a brand online. And I also started looking into in-person meetups. And one of the first events that was kind of caught my attention was this International Modeling Financial International Financial Modeling Competition. And I think it started in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. And it's essentially the competition is called Model Off, and it's essentially an online test for financial modelers that are building that you're tested on your financial modeling skills in Excel. And if you pass the online test, then you can make it to an in-person competition. And I think it's like 10 or 15 people. They fly into New York or they go into London. And it's a huge event where you're basically in a room for a whole day and you're building out of some kind of you're given a problem statement. You answer the problem in Excel. You submit it to the question moderators or the event organizers. And then they pick the top three people that had the most compelling and innovative solution built in Excel. And that's essentially the financial modeling competition. It's not like you're competing head to head and trying to write the formula as fast as you can. It's a little more thought out in terms of how you answer the questions. So, as a part of this International Financial Modeling Competition, in 2013, I went to my first one, I believe. And as a part of the broader competition, they also had these smaller kind of, I guess you can say, award ceremonies or side events. And they had one where it wasn't really a competition. They didn't have any real stake in the broader competition, but it was a way for people in the community to get together and learn about financial modeling. And so they had these small little kind of like actually head-to-head competitions. And if you look on my blog, if you search for, I think I called the blog post like the Hunger Games for Excel or something. You'll see kind of these people like back to back, like trying to, I think you had like 10 minutes to crank out the solution, and people worked in little groups. And as the competitors were working, you could actually walk around and see what they were doing. And it was kind of like watching a coder or something going to the flow state and trying to find a solution and build something. And so it's really a lot of fun just seeing how these Excel practitioners at the top of their field were building solutions. But then after kind of the main event, when people started just kind of networking and talking to each other, I started meeting people and just getting to know them. And I had actually brought like an old school point and shoot camera, like one of those Canon point and shoots, because I was like, man, it'd be really cool if I could like record some YouTube videos or something of this event, because I feel like not a lot of people know about this. And so I would ask people, hey, is it okay if I record a conversation? And then I would just kind of like literally stick my arm out and do kind of like selfie mode. And this is before like I think selfies were super popular. I was literally using this point and shoot and trying to record both of us talking to each other. And I would ask someone, hey, what brought you to this financial modeling competition? What got you into Excel? What were you hoping to learn? And generally speaking, I got pretty straightforward answers. Like I'm a student and I'm trying to learn Excel, and I heard about this competition and I thought it'd be a good way to improve my skills. And that was totally fine. And then I came across this one gentleman. I'm not gonna name any names here, but he was an Excel consultant, just like myself. At this time in my career, I was doing a lot of freelance consulting work, primarily in Excel. And I met this other gentleman who was also in the same shoes as I was, and asked him the same question. Hey, what brought you to this competition? What got you into the Excel space? What do you do? So on and so forth. Started off as a pretty standard answer. He mentioned that he also used to work for a big company and then went off on his own and built his own client base and started doing freelance consulting. And he just started going into his backstory. And then I started pressing him a little more for, well, why do you stick with Excel? Why didn't you try to go into other programs? Like, why don't you think about going into coding or building web applications? Why stick with Excel? And this is when things got a little strange, but also for me, gave me a reason to want to stick with doing what I'm doing all the way up to including this podcast. He mentioned how he was consulting for, I think he was actually doing pro bono work. And he was doing pro bono work for a woman who was in her late 50s or 60s, not very proficient in Excel. And this woman worked in some kind of customer support capacity, I think for maybe like a health company or some company that where she was kind of managing customer support. And one of her problems was she was not really proficient with Excel, so she was utilizing these Excel files that would take her a long time to accomplish some basic menial task, like marking off the hours that someone worked or aggregating all the times and the hourly pay for different customer support reps. And she became, I think she was friends with this gentleman. And she was talking to him about how, this Excel file takes me forever to figure out. Like, I can never do it. Pulling like all-nighters to like make this work, but this is so much manual labor. And I think he decided again to do this pro bono. He took her Excel file and he started doing some basic optimization, some writing some basic formulas, trying to automate as much as he could based on what he knew about her workflow at her company. And I think he spent a few days working on it and then gave her the Excel file back and explained to her, now instead of doing all these 10 manual steps, now this is all automated with this one formula or maybe this one macro, and it was simplified her job a lot more. And as he was explaining what he did to his friend, this woman who was very thankful for what he did, she started, I think, crying actually, and she was saying that, "Oh my God, this has saved me so much time. I can now finally get more time to be with my kids, and I never thought I could get out of this rut. And I thought that my life was just going to get exponentially harder because as more customer reps come on board and my work gets more complicated, this Excel file will just get even more insane. And I just felt like I was going to explode because I have to do all this manual work." And as I was talking to this gentleman and he explained to me this story, he told me that as he saw her reaction and as he received her praise for what he did, he also told me he saw the power that a simple program like Excel and automating a few tasks for someone that is not really proficient with Excel and doesn't know much about the program, how much of an impact it could have not only on her work but on her personal life. He realized that this is so powerful and that there's so many businesses, so many people like her that are out there that are stuck in the situation where they can't do their work proficiently. They can't spend time outside of, we can't, they can't spend time with their family because they have to deal with these manual steps in Excel. And I think when he heard this reaction from her, he started actually crying visibly in front of me too. I mean, not like bawling, but he was definitely tearing up. And I kept the camera rolling and he didn't say anything. And as I was talking to him, I was like, I just stayed quiet. I was just trying to get the whole story. But I could easily tell that he was super passionate after, very passionate about continuing his work, helping people with Excel, helping regular people do their jobs better and faster, saving them more time so they can spend time with their family. I could tell instantly that that experience for him gave him purpose for wanting to stick with Excel and continue to build solutions for people in the community. And I never published that video. I never published any of those videos because after that interview, I guess you could say, with that gentleman, I took stock of that experience, and instead of trying to turn these videos into like some YouTube compilation or whatever, I just took it as a sign that like people in this community that are helping others with Excel work are really doing it out of for a bigger purpose. I think it's for really for anyone that's helping regular people, small businesses, big businesses, and you become a practitioner, a craftsman in a specific tool, and you give back by, you know, doing pro bono work or going above and beyond the call of duty and really changing someone's life. Like that experience, I think is just, it's, you can't put a price on that. And it's really hard to value that aside from the fact that it just makes you feel good. And I think for me, it gives me a nice adrenaline rush when I can build a solution. I mean, today, whether it's in Excel or some other platform, being able to see that response and seeing how their time has been saved and how their workflow has been improved, that reaction, similar to what that gentleman experienced with that customer support person, can't be replicated. And whether I like it or not, I think every time I get that reaction, it's an adrenaline rush for me to feel that sense of, oh my God, like you helped me so much with my workflow. And I think that's what keeps me going every single day in my current job with helping people with Excel questions, is just the ability to create a solution that simplifies their workflow, their processes, and being able to empower people to learn these tools so that they can also build these solutions themselves, and also again further kind of pay it forward, empower other people to do the same thing too. And so, yeah, that was just a nice little story that I wanted to tell about, I think given that this is the 10th episode and didn't think I was going to make it this far, that this would be a good way to kind of do a little 10 episode check-in and about like why I'm doing this whole thing and why I'm going to continue creating blog posts and podcast episodes and other types of content that I can express my interest in this Excel and data analysis world, and hopefully inspire some other people to want to help others with their Excel and data analysis problems. All right, so that is the first part of the episode. And as with all my episodes, I want to talk about a few episodes from other podcasts I listen to that I think are really interesting and just relevant to, I guess, what I do on a day-to-day basis. So I've talked about, I've talked about this podcast before in the past. It's called Acquired, and they talk about really awesome companies that are going through IPOs and mergers and acquisitions. And they did an episode recently on the Lyft IPO. And Lyft is one of the big ride-sharing companies, as you all know. And in this episode, around right before the two-hour mark, Ben and I always forget the other guy's name. Sorry about that. But they were talking about how during the course of the episode, this is gonna near the two-hour mark, they've been talking about how they've mentioned Craigslist probably five or six times during the episode. And that's because in the episode, they talk about how Lyft was originally Zimride, which was originally someone finding that people on Craigslist were asking for rides to certain places and trying to just basically share, do ride sharing, but through Craigslist. And what I thought was interesting right around the two-hour mark was they start talking about how entire businesses, huge multimillion-dollar businesses, are built on specific vertical spaces in Craigslist. So if you think about just the ride-sharing aspect, it started with, you know, the people are asking, hey, is anyone going to LA? I'm coming from San Francisco. They posted on Craigslist, and people can respond to that classified ad, if you will. But if you extract that marketplace of people offering rides and people requesting rides, that is essentially what Lyft and Uber are. And what I thought they mentioned about Craigslist is that what was really interesting is that the minute that you apply these three concepts to any slice of Craigslist. And these three concepts are trust, efficiency, and safety that can turn any vertical in Craigslist into a business. So when I think about my time in New York, for instance, when early on when I was like selling my furniture on Craigslist or buying furniture on Craigslist, I would just post like, hey, here I'm moving out. Here's some images of my stuff. You know, the bookshelf costs $50. The couch is like $100. And when someone responds to my ad, I'm just hoping and praying that that person is not going to like rob me and like actually has the money. And it has always worked out, but I think about all the times in which it couldn't have. And if there was a market for buying and selling used furniture, I'm sure it would be so much better and safer than using Craigslist. I know there's probably 20 billion platforms out there that can do this, but Craigslist is just so much easier when it comes to the user interface and just like ease of use, and there's no middleman, blah, blah, blah. But for some reason, ride sharing is one of those things that when you apply trust, efficiency, and safety to it, makes experience so much better because you have a predictable fare and there's safety behind it in the sense that these drivers are vetted by a central party. So I think at a high level, it's super interesting that Craigslist, as easy as it is, people still use it because it's simple to use. But if you just look at any category in Craigslist, chances are there is a business that's built off of that category where it's a platform and there's safety, trust, and efficiency attached to it. I wonder how many companies now can exist just from looking at these different slices in Craigslist. But having said that, I think there's still some kind of like decentralized blockchain type of mentality when it comes to using Craigslist, and that there's no real central party to that will take fees from you, where it's really kind of off to the wisdom of the crowds, where if I want to sell my bookcase on Craigslist, I'm just kind of implicitly accepting the fact that I might get a weirdo or two that might show up to buy my furniture. But for the most part, it's really people that I think there's some kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like an unspoken rule that when you buy and sell on Craigslist, especially when it comes to used furniture, like just be a good human being and don't like screw each other over. I think that concept is it's definitely strong in social situations, but I think since there's so many opportunities to get screwed with that concept, that's why Uber and Lyft have done so well, is because they've basically operationalized that whole concept. So long story short, I think if you want to start a business, maybe start looking at Craigslist and looking at some verticals that look super hard and difficult to match suppliers or match sellers and buyers together. That could be one place to just start looking for ideas for a business. Yeah, and definitely a huge fan of the Acquired Podcast. So definitely give them a listen if you haven't done so already. All right, the next one is a really cool podcast that I just started listening to and a little more relevant to my space here with Excel and data analysis. It's the Software Engineering Daily Podcast. And they release episodes daily, and a lot of the episodes are definitely over my head in terms of the concepts. But there was one episode recently called Bubbles with Haseeb Qureshi. And I may be saying his name wrong, but the episode was essentially an interview with Haseeb, who, for background, he was a former poker player. He made millions playing poker like as a teenager, and then decided to go work in tech and became a programmer, worked at Airbnb and a few other places, I think. And then after that, more recently, he is in the world of crypto investing and blockchain projects. And what's interesting is that when I listened to this episode, I was like, man, this guy sounds so familiar. And I realized that when I was interviewing for a new job and I was kind of looking at I was kind of choosing between different companies I wanted to work for. And I remember looking up, like literally Googling how to like negotiate a job offer or something like that. And I came across his blog, and I read his blog post about how he like picked different companies to work for and all the different considerations. And he actually was very transparent about the salaries that he was being offered from these companies. And I read that blog post and I was like, man, this sounds. And then I listened to the episode and I was like, this guy sounds super familiar. And I was like, man, I wonder if it's the same guy that I read back when I was like interviewing. And it turns out it was. And so I was like super into this episode. And anyways, this that was like a little more of a personal backstory about how I came across this guy. Right around the 28-minute mark, he talks about Haseeb talks about how to de-risk your career, and he was saying that a lot of people, when they are working or trying to interview and find their next job, they tend to not take risks with their career. And what he means by that is he says that as a poker player, there is an optimal amount of risk that you should take at with every hand, with and at every move. And usually that optimal amount of risk is more than what you're comfortable taking. And that optimal amount of risk is takes into account the obviously the reward that you would get from making a big bet or push going calling a bet in poker. And he was saying how he was applying that same kind of mentality to his career. And what I found interesting was that, well, I just kind of agree with him in that people tend to not take risks with their career because they want to have that stable income and the benefits and the salary and all that stuff. But there is an optimal amount of risk that you can take at every stage in your life with your career where it's a little more risk than you're probably comfortable with or what the status quo is, but there you're saying that your career on the whole should be a bunch of high, not I guess optimal high level amounts of risk that can help you reap huge rewards financially. And he applies that same thing into his career. And I think that's kind of how he went from poker to programming to now crypto investing. Whether or not you believe in that mentality of taking risks, I think that doing that for your career is obviously a great step because it allows you to learn and allows you to reap financial rewards. But I think one thing that he doesn't take into account is whether or not you obviously have a mortgage and a family to support, where you might need a more stable source of income. But I think overall, if you have the right skill set and you have the right talents, you should be not de-risking your career at all. You should be taking all these high-level bets. Maybe you're betting. I think you mentioned how you can, if you had bet on chatbots back in the day when they were like super huge, even though chatbots are not that big now, you can always go back and work at another company where you can still apply your skill set. So I think for me, I think what was really cool about hearing him speak all this was number one, just knowing that his blog post back in the day helped me figure out and navigate my own career. But number two is constantly being able to take risks with your own career and finding that optimal level of uncomfortable risk when you want to find a new job and hopefully reap the rewards from that. And it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to put you outside of your comfort zone. But at a high level, it's going to be good for you because you will, either get rewards for it or not. Either way, there is you have a good safety plan in the case that you don't get a high reward. Then you can always go back to getting a regular job somewhere else. But you should always be pushing yourself in terms of getting that position that is not necessarily going to pay off in the long run. I think that's definitely apparent now with this current role working crypto investing, where
everyone's saying we're in a crypto winter, and he's obviously placing a bet with his career, saying that, you know, he's seen the technology, he's seen the signs, and it's the optimal amount of risk for him to take to get into this world of crypto investing, because even if it doesn't pay off, he can always go back to Silicon Valley or wherever and just get a regular programming or a product job. So definitely give the Software Engineering Daily podcast a listen, and definitely check out Haseeb Qureshi's blog. Definitely super helpful if you're actually in a career transition at the moment. So that's it for the 10th episode of Dear Analyst. If you've been listening all these episodes, thanks for bearing with my random thoughts and rants about Excel and data analysis, and I'll see you next time.